pain like childbirth and felt like her was rotting from inside. The threat of state-sanctioned violence against women's bodies, and in particular black and brown communities, is unfortunately not new to the Peach State. Georgia was the 32nd state to pass a sterilization law in 1937 and sterilized more than 3,000 individuals, the fifth highest in the country. Eugenics politics across U.S. legalized pseudoscientific practices used primarily by white elites to control black or indigenous people, immigrants, poor women, and people with disabilities who they believed were unfit or feeble-minded. These white supremacist policies continue today in many different forms, including in ICE practices and xenophobic anti-black legislation. Just like the Georgia State Board of Eugenics in 1930s, the majority white male legislators of the current Georgia General Assembly often continue to make decisions that harm communities of color and women, from its passage of Jim Crow voter suppression bill to a draconian anti-abortion bill and scores of anti-immigrant bills. The road to accountability and reparations for these abuses promises to be long and grueling. I'm speaking out to bring awareness to us women, mother, daughters who got abused at the hands of ICE so that it doesn't happen to anyone else, Dow says, adding, I would like to hold the U.S. government, ICE, and the Ervin staff and doctors accountable for what happened to us and to all others, physically, mentally, and emotionally. I'm calling for justice.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, The Strongest Warrior. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. We know that struggle against one's rebellious and sensual desires that lead to sins is called the greater jihad in Islam. So this struggle, this resistance, it being more important and valuable than struggle with the external enemies. This warfare is the means of purification of the soul and requires a strong will to achieve victory. In societies stained with sin, filled with sin, the value of this warfare is more obvious, and its importance in achievement of social objectives cannot be denied. Victories of the Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, in Medina, for instance, all of these victories were actually the direct result of purification of soul and spiritual struggles of his companions. See, sometimes we think that victories come with technology, ammunition, you know, cutting-edge, latest gadgets. No, the real victory, it comes through the purification of soul. It strengthens one's will and determination, and in return, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provides victory for that person. The 11th Imam, he said, the strongest warrior for the faith among people is one who gives up the sins. This is what the real victory is, and it gets achieved through self-purification. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing who the strongest warrior is in the eyes of Islam, in the eyes of Prophet, and in the eyes of Imams. We said those people, those selected people who resist against their sensual desires, who fight against their lowly, worldly desires, they are the real warriors, and they are eventually victorious. We know that giving up sins in today's time and age is not an easy task. It is not that, you know, you just walk into a park, you know, you take a walk in a park. It's not like that. We are filled with sinful societies and sinful atmosphere. In the midst of all this sinning that takes place in human society today, to keep oneself purified, to keep oneself away from sins, is a very daunting task. It's not easy. But at the same time, brothers and sisters, it's not that difficult. All one needs to do is to be in that state of jihad against one's nafs, jihad against one's soul, jihad against one's lowly worldly desires. If somebody is determined and committed, and I believe we all have the potential to get there, we just don't try hard enough. If one does that, then according to Islam, according to Prophet and Imams, the infallible Imams, it is the Jihad al-Akbar, the greatest jihad. And this person who performs it is the strongest warrior the world would have seen. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight. The United States has urged Britain to follow its example and try to repair its relations with Paris in the wake of the row over France's loss of its submarine contract with Australia. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's diplomatic editor, Patrick Winter. The piece is titled, US Urges UK to Rebuild Relations with Paris After Submarine Contract Row. The United States has urged Britain to follow its example and try to repair its relations with Paris in the wake of the row over France's loss of its submarine contract with Australia. Australia pulled out of the $66 billion contract for 12 diesel-electric-powered submarines signed in 2016 to opt instead for nuclear-powered submarines to be developed with America and the United Kingdom. The secretive and sudden cancellation of the contract has created a crisis of trust between Paris on the one hand and London, Canberra and Washington on the other. But senior US diplomats, including the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken, spent 2 days in France and Brussels trying to repair relations after French leaders made clear they felt the trio of nations had gone behind their back to form the new alliance. Antony Blinken met the French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian in Paris on 5th of October. The US's National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan also met the French Foreign Policy Advisor Emmanuel Bon. French President Emmanuel Macron is also due to hold a bilateral face-to-face meeting with President Joe Biden at the G20 summit in Rome, Italy. US diplomats have been disappointed that the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has not made any parallel effort to patch up relations with President Macron. There has been one explanatory phone call, while Boris Johnson expressed his frustration with French complaints over the loss of the contract, saying, "Donnez-moi un break." One diplomat said, "We had hoped for a three-legged stool of Britain, Europe and the United States, but we're having to run more of a hub-and-spoke operation in which we reach out separately to democracies in Europe, UK and Asia." The diplomat expressed hope that the British would think more strategically about relations with Europe. One senior US diplomat admitted in retrospect the handling of the Australian cancellation of the French contract was an unforced error, and at best, there should have been a decent 3-month interval before the announcement of the new security alliance between Australia, Britain, and the United States. There were disagreements within the Biden administration about how to handle the affair once it was clear that Australia wanted to end the submarine contract and adopt US nuclear-propelled submarines. Some argued that it was foolish to alienate the French, since the interregnum created by the German elections meant that France was effectively at the helm of the European foreign policy. The Australians insisted on secrecy. The French have now largely decided to capitalize on US political embarrassment to win concessions from Washington over a strengthened European defense pillar inside NATO, greater US cooperation in fighting terrorism in the Sahel, and recognition of the legitimacy of the European Union's role in the Indo-Pacific region, which will be highlighted by a special conference convened by the French during its presidency of the European Union in the first half of next year. But there is no parallel rapprochement between the French and the Australians, or the British. The French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian, giving evidence to the French Parliament, said the ball remained in Boris Johnson's court, adding that there had been a promise of proposals from the French, but none had been submitted. He was even more scathing about Canberra, saying that it had taken a leap into the unknown by choosing to resort to technology that Australians do not and will not master in the future. They thus placed themselves entirely at the mercy of developments in American policy. I wish our Australian partner, who made the choice for reasons of security, justified by the escalation of tensions with China, to the detriment of sovereignty, does not discover later that it has sacrificed both. The French Foreign Minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, also said it was a matter of concern that the British, who are organising the Glasgow COP26 conference, had agreed to a trade deal with Australia without taking into account the Paris Climate Accord. France's Defence Minister, Florence Parly, has faced tough questioning about how the French intelligence services and defence industry could have misread the signals coming from Australia over the contract's future, or had been given no warning by the Americans. The French Defence Minister, Florence Parly, said no one could have envisaged Australia would be so willing to lose its sovereignty. The aggrieved tone still emerging from France contrasts with remarks by the European Union's External Affairs Chief, Josep Borrell, who on Friday, 15th of October, in Washington, D.C., put the submarine issue in the past by insisting that the controversy was now over.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms. Whether you're a plant or an inanimate object, you're listening to Youth Station, brought to you by IRIB English Radio. I'm Zainab, by the way.
Yeah? Choo-choo-choo-choo. It's the Youth Station for you. I'm Muzaffar Haider, at your service today.
When was the last time you read a book? Or listened to one? Dyslexic, we don't pressure people here. This is a safe place.
I can read.
Dang it.
I can read, don't worry. I mean, it's more dyspraxia than dyslexia. And, you know, you just have to fight through it and things start to make sense eventually, yeah.
No, but if you have to struggle with it that much, then audiobooks. When was the last time you associated yourself with a book?
Last night. I was reading a book, Tafsir.
That counts
as a book, right? Yeah.
For sure.
I was reading through that, yeah. Yeah, I read. What about you?
I am ashamed to say that I haven't read a book in a few months now.
I don't believe that. But you dabbled. You must have. You had some sort of PDF on your phone.
I remember why I'm not reading now. I'm studying.
Ah, yes. So you're reading textbooks.
Yes.
Boring.
It is. Yeah. But I like what I'm studying, so it's cool. Do you find yourself mixing up the things you read often, or do you stick to a specific favorite genre?
No, I've got to mix it up. So sometimes I'll be reading 40 Hadith of Imam Khomeini.
Mashallah.
Wicked book. Oh my God. Like, and then I'll go to a book by Imam Khamenei, or then I'll go to Tafsir Noor, and then I'll get bored of all of them, and then I'll quickly go to a different book. So this is a recent phenomenon with me, by the way. I haven't been a big reader all my life. This is a secret between you and me and all of the listeners.
It wasn't much of a secret, though, bro. I think everyone who knows you knows that.
Yeah, I can't. Okay, let me give you examples, right? So when it comes to certain letters in the Arabic alphabet, including Farsi as well, right? Mm. They look very similar. There's
obviously
just a dot and it completely changes it. That's
for
unfair.
Sure.
So I had to give them personalities, like to actually remember them. So
see, this is why he doesn't like reading. Yeah. If you, I feel like you see the world, you know how people see the world through rose-colored glasses? You see the world through everything to you is an animation design, isn't it? Your head is like a Disney studio or DreamWorks studio.
No.
Pixar?
One day, inshallah, we're going to do so much better than them. Blow the minds of your offspring. Of the next generation, inshallah. They're just going to be like, being a Muslim is so cool. But anyway, did you know that children are hardwired to recognize faces? Actually, we as human beings, as a human race, we can identify faces very quickly. You'll have to ask yourself that. But, okay, so a child, apparently, when they are close to their mother, the first thing that they're looking at and they're engaging with and they're seeking comfort from is the face of their mother, right? And so we grow up identifying faces. And that's why, you know, whenever you see an emoji, you recognize it straight away. Or you see a strange tree and you think, oh, it has a nose and eyes and a face. When it doesn't.
We're constantly looking out for faces.
Yeah, you're looking out for faces. Right?
That's weird, but okay.
Yeah. You can, and humans can quickly put faces onto things which don't have faces at all. You'll see a panel with two buttons and, I don't know, like a...
I saw it, yeah.
A grail right there, right? There you go. There's a face right there. Yeah.
Brothers and sisters, we're going to go on a short break, so please stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to Youth Station, and we have been talking about, had you always stuck to a certain field of studying, right? Or your major field even?
Yeah, one of the most important things you've highlighted there is that we need to broaden our horizons. It's not just about... Because, look, have you seen Divergent or read the book, Divergent?
Yet.
Okay, so basically, in a nutshell, it is about a post-apocalyptic society.
Isn't it always?
Right? Dystopian society. Mm-hmm. And they're being controlled. How? They've been divided into three or four groups. Mm. And each group has to stay among their group, right?
Oh, like that social system, the castes, the what?
Yeah, like the castes, okay? Imam Khamenei talks about a fascinating subject. He talks about how idol worship actually was a mechanism to control the society. And he mentions wherever you see idol worship, you also see a kind of caste system taking place, right? Where the society is divided. When you're divided, you're easier to control. Now, coming back to the movie, Divergent, they discuss a society where one group is the military, right? They can only do military stuff. They're physically fit and, you know, they don't know how to use weapons.
And, you know, bringing law and order.
Okay. Now, another group is the scientists. They're really clever, but they have no military skill or anything. They just can create.
They're just brains.
Right. They're just brains. That's it. Then another group, they're the compassionate side. They have compassion. They're talking about, you know, the arts and religiosity and being kind to your neighbors and love and all of this kind of stuff, right? And then you have another group.
They're probably the bozo.
The scientists, they have brains, but they have no military skill. They have no courage, right? The military people, they can fight, but they can't think to themselves, why are we fighting?
Nor do they have compassion.
Right? And they don't have compassion. And they can't turn around and say, hey, you're the actual enemy, you people who are... You know, you government who is telling us to go and kill these innocent people. I'm not going to do it anymore. No, because they can't do that. They don't have the capacity. My point is, back in the day, universities used to teach a broad range of subjects. I'm talking about like go back hundreds of years, right?
Thousands even.
I'll have to look that one up. But yeah, they used to teach philosophy and mathematics and literature and poetry and all of this kind of stuff, right? Then you would become a doctor or a bachelor of arts. Right? In today's society, what happens? One subject and you go really deep into that one subject. Right? It might be medicine. It might be literature. It might be any subject, psychology. But at the end of the day, you are only studying that one subject and therefore you will never understand the perspectives of others, nor will you understand where your particular field of knowledge fits in the grand scheme of things, and you can be controlled.
Exactly. I was just looking up when was the first university.
It was by a woman, yes. A Muslim woman.
The nourishing mother of the studies, according to the Latin motto, the University of Bologna was founded in 1088 and having had never been out of operation, holds the title of the oldest university in the world. 1088 sort of makes it 1,000 years ago. Yeah, I totally agree with you. We need to dabble into different fields. Mm-hmm. We need to mix things up. We need to change the people we talk to. I'm not saying that change our set of friends regularly, because that would make turn us into a volatile, disloyal individual. But I'm saying that if you don't have social anxiety and if you're not necessarily annoyed by human beings, it's a good idea for you to try to join different social chats, groups, try to take up different hobbies so you'd be exposed to more people.
Yeah.
Traveling is always a good idea, maybe not now during the pandemic or when the economy of every world is going through a state of crisis. But when we look at the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, or the Ahlul Bayt or the other prophets, ala nabina wa alihi wasallam, they never stuck to a certain class of people and called them, oh, this is my class, my people.
No.
You know? They mingled with everyone. Sure, it was their job because they had a mission, right? And they had this message to preach to the world.
The rich, the poor, the different races, different cultures.
The point is that it's really important for us to challenge ourselves. Get out of that dang comfort zone. Get out of that dang comfort zone every once in a while, because you are more than you.
And you need to learn to diversify.
Exactly.
Stop being just the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Get turning into this really boring, one-dimensional, unflexible, like stringy, weird, awkward. All right, bro, I'm going to cut you off right there for a sec. We're going to go for a short break and be right back.
Dear listener of IRIB English Radio, if you have any idea or suggestion, please send us to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
If you go to the Quran, actually, it's almost like Allah is encouraging us to explore, because he says, you know, his
Siru fil ard.
Siru fil ard. And he says, you know, my earth is wasa'a.
Yeah, what does siru fil ard mean, by the way?
Travel in the land.
It's really important for us to constantly challenge ourselves and try to better ourselves, try new things, expose ourselves to new ideas and opinions and perspectives and schools of thought even. You know, the hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, where his eminence says, don't do taqleed in your religion. Don't mimic your religion. And even in the Quran, Allah basically had the hugest issue with the polytheists that were like, but we saw our dads do this and our forefathers, and we're just doing what they did. Right? Wajidna abana. And Allah was like, well, I gave you brain.
Yeah.
I gave you intellect. I gave you...
Allah, look, astaghfirullah, let's... like put ourselves into Allah's shoes for a moment. This thing, I gave it so much potential. You have a brain. I didn't just give you a brain. I gave you a left brain and a right. The mathematical side and the colorful, like the imagination side of everything. I gave you a subconscious so you could just dump thought after thought and memory after memory. And I gave you a conscious mind so you can bring everything to the forefront. I give you eyes to see, mouth to speak with, communication. I gave you legs to walk. We're actually really efficient if we compare ourselves to the other animals on earth. We're really efficient creatures. Like, we can actually travel great distances. And by we, I mean we loosely.
But I compare myself with birds.
I'm a major, major procrastinator.
You are.
And sometimes procrastination is really good. I remember hating maths all my life. The moment I left school and I was no longer studying maths, I suddenly fell in love with it.
For real?
Okay, I didn't fall in love with it, but I find it really fascinating. I end up watching videos online about just random mathematical theories, and they're really, wow. It's like, you know, any subject that you're actually studying becomes boring.
Force. The problem is force. Anything that is mandatory.
Ah.
Right? That's the nature of human being.
Mm.
And I think that's why Allah is like, La ikraha fid din. He knows what he created. He's like, guys, it's fine, it's fine. No one's forcing you to do anything. Read
Iqra.
Different things.
Right? The first verse of the Quran, Iqra bismi rabbika alladhi khalaq.
First verse revealed. Because then they're going to be like, I thought first verse with Alhamdulillah.
That's true. Al-Anabi. You people are so confused. You need help.
Yes, you should read more. And, you know, try different things. Try different things. You never know what your full potential is if you don't challenge yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And that's only through that will you grow?
Mm-hmm.
Will you be able to improve yourself and your beliefs and your doctrine even and who you are?
And I love what you said about getting out of your comfort zone. You need to get out of your comfort zone. Don't
every
just be like, I'm good at this subject, so I'm going to stick to this subject and study nothing else. That's how educated morons are created. Don't become an educated moron. They
ever.
Are the worst people.
Don't be a one-dimensional person.
Yeah. Expand your horizons, spread your wings, fly.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
In the limelight. The row over the British government's handling of COP26 planning has emerged amid public order concerns, with up to 150,000 protesters expected to take to Glasgow streets in early November, alongside the crucial climate talks, which will require one of the largest policing operations ever undertaken in Britain. We now present you an article written by Gillian Ambrose. The piece is titled COP26 Corporate Sponsors Condemn Climate Summit as Mismanaged. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Companies that have stumped up millions of pounds to sponsor the COP26 climate summit have condemned it as mismanaged and very last minute in a volley of complaints as next month's event in Glasgow draws near. The sponsors, which include some of Britain's biggest companies, have raised formal complaints blaming very inexperienced civil servants for delayed decisions, poor communications and a breakdown in relations between the organisers of the event and firms in the run-up to the landmark talks. The Guardian understands that a letter to the organizers, written by broadcaster Sky and co-signed by senior leaders from other COP26 sponsors, has raised concerns with them over these and other problems, and followed another co-signed letter in July. Britain is running its COP26 presidency from within the Cabinet Office under the leadership of the former Business Secretary Alok Sharma, who is the COP26 president, and the businessman Nigel Topping, who was appointed the government's so-called high-level climate action champion last year. Sponsorship is expected to help defray a policing bill estimated to reach up to £250 million. Alongside Sky, the summit has 10 other major sponsors, including energy giants Hitachi, National Grid, Scottish Power and SSE, US technology titan Microsoft, and the FTSE companies GSK, National Westminster Bank, Reckitt, Sainsbury's and Unilever. Unilever has denied signing the letter penned by Sky. Other lower-tier partners include the carmaker Jaguar Land Rover and the furniture retailer IKEA. One source employed by the COP26 sponsor said that the biggest frustration was the lack of information about how the event will run and the role for its key backers, because important questions have gone unanswered and planning decisions have been delayed. The source said they had an extra year to prepare for COP26 due to COVID, but it doesn't feel like this time was used to make better progress. Everything feels very last minute. The upcoming climate talks in Glasgow, considered by many as the last chance to put the world on track to meet its climate ambitions, are due to take place in early November, after the event was postponed by a year because of the outbreak of COVID-19 in early 2020. They have already been thrown into turmoil by suggestions that the Chinese President Xi Jinping will skip the event, threatening the chances of a global pact with one of the world's biggest industrial nations. Organisers of COP26 promised sponsors an outstanding opportunity and unique benefits in exchange for their support, including a chance to promote their brands at the conference Green Zone exhibition space and the participation of government ministers at their events. But in multiple emails and official letters, the companies have complained to the organisers about unmet expectations and deepening concerns over delays to Green Zone plans. They've also raised complaints that ministers have not always been available for their events in the run-up to COP26, as agreed as part of the sponsors' deals. Other sources have described the shifting goalposts and inertia plaguing the COP26 planning as deeply frustrating. Another source explained many of the event's corporate backers regularly take part in high-profile sponsorship deals for big events and have been left bewildered by the slow progress of the COP26 events. The source blamed the very young, very inexperienced civil servants tasked with planning the event for taking a top-down public sector approach that has raised hackles among sponsors. The source said it is clear that many of them have very little experience managing relationships in the private sector, or even experience attending a COP event. The energy companies sponsoring COP26, Hitachi, National Grid, Scottish Power and SSE, are understood to be particularly frustrated because they were under the impression that no other energy brands would feature at COP26. However, the Blue Zone, which is organised by the United Nations, would include rival brands. Ministers had been due to release three key documents in coming days on the government's plans to achieve its net zero target by 2035. But publication has been delayed owing to the murder of Conservative MP Sir David Ames. The document revealed a stark split within the cabinet, understood to be between, on one side, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, the Business Secretary, and Michael Gove, responsible for improving the UK's homes, all seeing benefits to the strong climate action. And on the other hand, the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, a free market hawk, instinctively opposed to government intervention. All three papers are now expected to come later in the week, with the government seeking to preserve a show of unity over the publications. The row over the government's handling of COP26 planning has emerged amid public order concerns, with up to 150,000 protesters expected to take to streets in Glasgow in early November, alongside the crucial climate talks, which will require one of the largest policing operations ever undertaken in Britain. Countries and organisations planning to host events that also said they fear that increased costs will cause problems for developing nations. Multiple participants told The Guardian recently that the cost of renting COP26 pavilions, these are event spaces for hosting workshops, panel discussions and keynote speeches during the conference, is considerably higher than it was at COP25 in Madrid, Spain, with some saying it has increased by as much as 30%. A COP26 spokesperson said the organisers were working closely with sponsors, which would increase the value for money for taxpayers and reduce the overall financial cost of COP26. A Whitehall veteran of COP summits said, "It feels like some of these sponsors have forgotten the actual reason we're in Glasgow. COP26 isn't about branding, it's about tackling climate change. Keeping 1.5 degrees Celsius in reach is the best thing you can do for your bottom line. They would do well to remember this."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
November 25th, 2018. In a meeting with government officials of the Islamic Republic of Iran, ambassadors of Islamic countries and participants of the 32 Conference on Islamic Unity, practicing Islamic unity will allow Muslims to overcome all the schemes of the enemies of Islam. the Holy Prophet. He was a bright sun who shone during the time of ignorance and Jahili deception, and who illuminated the world. As the Commander of the Faithful, peace and greetings be upon him, said, "While the world was devoid of brightness and full of open deceitfulness, this is the truth of the matter, the world was saturated with the darkness of Jahiliya and deception during the time when the God of the world presented that light to humanity. Today, the holy body of the Holy Prophet is not with us, but God sent him with guidance and true religion. His religion and his guidance are with us. If we follow this light, and if we are among the people who are described as the ones who follow the light which is sent down with him, then the result is that it is they who will prosper." The Holy Quran, Surah 7, verse 157.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Obeying divine guidance and the light which he has sent down, this light is the Quran, as it is the book of guidance and light, and obeying this divine gift given by God through the Holy Prophet will help humanity to achieve bliss and salvation. Humanity is after bliss and salvation. From the beginning until today, the plight of humanity has been a lack of justice, mercy, and guidance. The various forms of ignorance that humanity has experienced have made life difficult for humanity. Today, humanity is in need of the same source of light. Today, too, humanity needs to accept the Holy Prophet's invitation, which is an invitation to the truth, to integrity, and to mercy. If humanity reaches such a level of intellectual maturity that it accepts the invitation of the Holy Prophet of Islam, then its maladies will be healed.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The olive harvest season has started in the occupied Palestinian territories, but instead of being a festive season, it's been overshadowed by the sporadic attacks by Israeli settlers like previous years. We visited the village of Al-Mghayyar, northeast of the occupied Ramallah, where Israeli settlers vandalized over 100 olive trees a while ago. One of the landowners told us that settler attacks on the groves have escalated during the autumn harvesting season.
The settlers do whatever in their power to prevent us from harvesting. They till our crops, destroy our lands, and sometimes burn our trees. They try to keep us away from our lands. 2 days ago, over 100 olive trees were destroyed. The settlers are protected by Israeli forces.
As Palestinian farmers here and other villages suffer an almost daily act of aggression by Israeli settlers, a popular campaign called Faza has been launched to protect farmers. These areas are considered to be at high risk of settler attacks during the harvest season. Supported by the Committee Against the War and Settlement, the campaign has attracted volunteers including university students, farming committees, local councils, and residents of the villages.
Every year, Palestinian farmers come under attack by the settlers in areas close to Israeli settlements. We have come to Al-Mughayyar village to help Palestinian farmers in harvesting their products as quickly as possible and protect them against settler attacks.
Al-Mughayyar is surrounded by a number of settlements. Israeli settlers attack Palestinian farmers on a daily basis, but when we appear in groups, our farmers feel safer and the settlers won't dare to attack them.
The vandalism by the extremist settlers have persisted year after year during the olive harvest season in recent years. Observers say these settlements have been set up to encircle Palestinian areas to make life harder for Palestinians.
Olive harvest has never been easy for Palestinian families living close to Israeli settlements. Olive harvest is considered by many of them as a way to stay connected to their land and protect it against the Israelis. This land has been a source of food and income for Palestinian families for generations. Mona Qandil, Al-Mughayyar village, northeast of occupied Ramallah.
From the 2019 anti-government protests in Lebanon to the 2020 explosion in Beirut port, the documentary delves into the heart of the historic incidents to shed light on the truth. Directed by Lebanese filmmaker Sahar Hossein Ghaddar, the feature documentary was premiered in Tehran. Over the course of the filmmaking, Sahar attended the 2019 nationwide protests, which she says were sparked by economic mismanagement and corruption, but were wrongly portrayed to be against the resistance movement.
The
2019 demonstrations were born out of people's pain and hardship and sought to put an end to 3 decades of corruption entrenched in the ruling system in Lebanon. People from all walks of life, including supporters of the resistance movement, were among the protesters. But Israeli opportunists tried to hijack the protest and say that the demonstrations were triggered by anti-Hezbollah sentiments.
The documentary also reviews the August 2020 blast at the port of Beirut, which killed 219 people. No one has yet been charged in the 14-month probe into the incident. However, Hezbollah has been critical of Judge Tariq Bitar for weeks, accusing him of singling out Hezbollah-affiliated politicians for questioning over the explosion. Last week, 6 pro-Hezbollah protesters were shot dead by anonymous gunmen during a demonstration by resistance groups who called the investigation politicized and demanded the removal of Judge Bitar.
Israeli footprints can be traced in the case that investigates the Beirut explosion. Israel and the U.S. seize any chance to deal a blow to our country and the resistance axis. What Mr. Bitar is doing serves the interest of our Israeli and American enemies by trying in vain to implicate Hezbollah in the Beirut port blast. And we saw a few days ago that our peaceful protests against Bitar were faced by sniper bullets shot by a Lebanese forces faction from a Christian neighborhood.
Last year's port blast happened after a fire detonated nearly 3,000 tons of ammonium nitrate, a combustible chemical widely used as agricultural fertilizer that had been stored unsafely in a port warehouse for almost 6 years. Based on information provided in the documentary, senior Lebanese officials were aware of the material's existence and the danger it posed, but failed to secure, remove, or destroy it.
The documentarian says her film tries to expose what she calls a string of lies that seeks to smear the resistance axis. She says that string is pulled by Israel, stressing that she and her fellow Lebanese youth demand a strong government and judicial system that are independent of Israeli manipulation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And
anger boiling on the streets of Karachi. People have come together to denounce the recent deadly attacks on two Shia mosques in the neighboring Afghanistan, Kunduz and Kandahar, that took the lives of over 100 worshippers. Protesters are outraged at what they call the global powers' failure in Afghanistan that led to the chaos and instability there. They say those powers are responsible for the recent bloodshed in the war-torn Afghanistan. Protesters chant anti-Israel and anti-US slogans and stress the need for unity among Muslims.
We were martyred in mosques, we were martyred on roads and processions, but we never backed off from our stance of following the footsteps of Hussein ibn Ali. It is the responsibility of Kabul government to provide security to Shia Muslims in Afghanistan. Otherwise, Taliban government can never get away with global criticism.
Fear looms large that the government in Kabul is unable to curb terrorist groups like Daesh terrorist group, who has claimed the attacks.
We are here to show solidarity with our brothers and sisters whose loved one became the victims of brutal terror attacks in Kunduz and Kandahar Shia mosques in last two Friday prayers. U.S. shameful withdrawal from Afghanistan brought us to this day, where our brothers and sisters are not safe.
Protesters also called on the Pakistani government to take up issue with the Afghan government. They said the international community should not remain silent towards the crimes being committed against Shia people of Afghanistan. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Following fiercer clashes with the Saudi led coalition's forces and terrorist groups, Yemen's armed forces successfully liberated 3,200 square kilometers in Marib and Shabwa provinces, Bayhan, Ain, and Usaylan directorates of Shabwa, as well as Abdiya and Harib of Marib were liberated during the operation named Spring of Victory.
Our armed forces have managed to accomplish a Spring of Victory operation in the Marib and Shabwa governorates and achieve their goals. By the operation, the army liberated vast areas amounting to thousands of square kilometers.
Yemeni officials say the recent victory was made in two strategic provinces with the cooperation of tribesmen in most of the liberated areas.
The significance of the operation lies in the importance of the two governorates in which the battle took place, namely Marib and Shabwa, which are oil-rich and strategic. This operation will have a direct impact on the Saudi-led coalition. The tribesmen played an unprecedented role in liberating these areas.
Earlier, the spokesman of the Yemeni army had announced that the armed forces liberated 600 square kilometers in the oil-rich province of Marib.
Vast areas in Marib and Shabwa provinces have been captured by the Yemeni army, which means that the armed forces will go further in their efforts to liberate the eastern Shabwa province after liberating the whole province of Marib, the last stronghold of the Saudi-backed forces in northern Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Kandahar mosque blast was the deadliest incident since the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan in August. It was the second week in a row that a Shia mosque came under an attack claimed by Daesh terrorist group.
I think Daesh attacks must be considered as crimes against humanity. They kill hundreds without being held accountable. The perpetrators are Takfiri terrorist groups and the enemies of Afghanistan and Islam. Taliban, as a new ruler, should maintain security, not only for their officials, but also for citizens.
Recent bomb attacks that targeted our innocent people have no place in Islam. They are misusing Islam's name. The government should take decisive measures and bring those responsible to justice.
Observers see the attacks as part of a larger plot to sow seditions between Muslim brothers in Afghanistan. They add that there are hands-off intelligence agencies and countries behind these divisive plots.
Being defeated in Iraq and Syria, the Daesh terrorist group is taking revenge on Afghan Shias. Also, the U.S. is seeking revenge for its defeat in Afghanistan.
Kandahar attacks comes in line of a series of attacks targeting the unity of Afghan Muslims. Moreover, the most important point about these attacks is that the U.S. is trying to create tensions in the region to involve Iran, India, and Russia in an unwanted war.
The Afghanistan Shia Clerics Council condemned the attack and urged the Taliban government to take action against Daesh